Civics 101 is supported in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Who is the current Speaker of the House?
Don't even know.
Will they rule in the president's favor or will they send it to the Supreme Court?
You can't refer to a senator directly by their name.
Congressional redistricting.
Separation of power.
Executive orders.
The National Security Council.
Civics 101.
I'm Virginia Prescott, and this is Civics 101, the podcast refresher course on the basics of American democracy. Today, we're learning more about a fairly obscure government office that you asked us to look into.
Hi, my name is Sion from Hyattsville, Maryland, and I was wondering what exactly is the function of the Inspector General, and how is it different from, say, the U.S. Attorney General?
Elizabeth Hempowitz is with us. She is Policy Director for the Project on Government Oversight, also known as POGO. Okay, Elizabeth, you think you can help us out with this?
Yes, and I'm so excited to be here.
Well, let's do it. What is an Inspector General?
So Inspectors General are an internal watchdog office that in theory is independent of the agency that it's overseeing, and it reports both to the agency head and to Congress. They're kind of in charge with making sure that everything that the agency is doing is in line with the laws, rules, and regulations governing that agency.
So I know that they're state, they're, you know, municipal, county inspectors general.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to focus on the federal government inspectors general. How many are there?
So right now, I believe there are 72 total inspectors general offices. Now, a lot of those are vacant. I don't have that exact number off the top of my head, but when there's a vacancy, it's usually filled by an acting inspector general. But there are problems with that. They're a little bit less independent. They haven't been congressionally confirmed. And so 72 is the short answer to that question, but it's a little bit more complicated.
Does each government department have an inspector general assigned to it, ideally?
For the most part, there are some kind of, so there's one inspector general for the Department of Defense, and then there are smaller branch inspectors general. So that's where I think that number comes from. The 72 includes broader inspectors general looking, overseeing a bigger agency, and then some sub-agencies have their own offices.
So to get to that listener question, when and why were they formed?
So the first inspector general goes back to a military inspector general in George Washington's army.
Wow.
So the first inspector general was in 1778. And then for a long time, inspectors general were just military offices, and they mostly focused on auditing and making sure that, you know, money was being well spent and spent on the things that it was meant to be spent on. And then IGs, inspectors general, as we know them today, started really becoming more on the civil side in 1978 when Congress passed the Inspectors General Act. And that's kind of what we talk about in general conversation when we're talking about inspectors general. That includes the military inspectors general.
So how are they chosen?
So there are certain inspectors general that are chosen. These are like cabinet level agencies. Those inspectors general are chosen, nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate. There are some inspectors general that are chosen by the agency heads and don't go through that Senate confirmation process.
OK, so now that we're deep into our scholarship, I think we can say IGs. How long do they serve?
So they don't serve in a set term, but they all serve at the pleasure of the president.
So you said they serve in a capacity as auditing. They're kind of watchdogs over departments. Is this like internal affairs inside of a police department?
Yeah. I think that's a pretty good analogy.
Is there a central office of inspectors general that they all report to?
No. So they do have this kind of dual reporting structure to the agency head and to Congress, which makes sense if you think about it. What the inspectors general are supposed to be doing is making sure that the agency is running in the way that it should be. And that includes, you know, their own internal rules and regulations, and then also that they're following the laws that Congress has passed to govern the agency. And so this dual reporting structure, I think, has come under criticism as, you know, kind of giving the IGs split loyalties. But the office of the inspector general really serves the Congress and serves the American people, making sure that tax dollars are being spent the way that they've been allocated to be spent, and that, you know, there isn't all this rampant illegal activity going on in these agencies.
So they're probably spending a lot of time looking at spreadsheets, crunching numbers, watching how things are going.
Yes.
Okay. Do they conduct routine investigations or do they have to be prompted? Does someone have to say, you know, I think there's something going on over at the Department of Agriculture you should look into?
Right. So there are a few different ways that IGs can launch investigations. A large set of the investigations that they do are congressionally mandated, and that is through legislation. So it'll, you know, there will be something typically at the end of a bill that's going through Congress that says, and the inspector general will prepare a report that will go to, you know, Congress on this subject. Those are less routine, but also not like, you know, there's this big issue, and so they're reacting to an issue. It's mostly involved in making sure that the law that's being passed, that this is in, that the mandates in those laws are being carried out appropriately by the agency. Then there's investigations that are sparked by a congressional inquiry, and that's different, you know, than legislatively requested. And then there are investigations that they start because they got a whistleblower complaint, or somebody internally from the agency came forward and said, you know, I think there's something wrong in this program. I think this money is not being spent in the way that it was supposed to, or they're cutting corners. And then finally, they have kind of their annual reports that they send up to Congress. And those are the most routine ones. You know, it's like, how many complaints did you receive? How is the agency doing on a whole? They have these different metrics that they report up to Congress.
And by the way, I don't suspect that the Department of Agriculture is especially corrupt. It's just my example today.
Right.
How is an IG investigation different than a congressional committee investigation? You know, so the investigation into possible Russian meddling in the 2016 election, for example, led by special counsel Robert Mueller.
Right. So I think the biggest difference is the scope of the investigation. So IGs really only have jurisdiction over their agency. They also don't. Most of them don't have subpoena power, which means that they can only compel current employees of the agency to answer their questions and cooperate with an investigation. This has turned into a problem, I think, in more senior level investigations, where subjects of the investigations have reached the point where they can retire or leave government service, and then they are kind of outside of the bounds of where an IG can touch them and can make them answer questions.
Yeah. So Robert Mueller, for example, he could convene a grand jury. That could not happen with an IG.
Right. And most congressional committees also have subpoena power. And so the scopes of the investigation and the tools that they have are different.
Are they, obviously, it's not just one person conducting these kind of investigations, but are there offices actually inside of the agency that they're investigating?
Yeah, for the most part, which creates, you know, an interesting tension. They're obviously there as the watchdogs, and they're theoretically and ideally independent of the agency. But yes, mostly their offices are in the same building, on the same floors as the people that they're overseeing.
So they obviously put out reports about their investigations. They, within the IG office, are sure to say that, you know, many people work for them. They issued more than 2,200 reports in the most recent year, including more than 8,800 recommendations to reduce government waste, fraud, abuse, and mismanagement. What actually happens to these reports? I mean, it's a fairly unknown office. Maybe is there an investigation that you can think of that an IG did that actually resulted in legislation or policy changes?
You know, not off the top of my head, but you asked an interesting question, which is, you know, what happens to these reports? They're full of these recommendations in which to how to reduce waste, fraud, abuse, mismanagement in an agency. But it really is then up to the agency to implement those recommendations and up to Congress to kind of conduct the oversight over the agency and make sure that they either are implementing the recommendations or have a good reason why they aren't. I think that's one of the frustrations for inspectors general is that they don't have, you know, kind of this power to compel change. But what, you know, they do have the power to put out, you know, compelling documents that say this is why this change is necessary. This is the money it'll save. You know, I think there's my favorite statistic is that for every $1 spent in an IG office, they on average find a savings of $17. And that's taxpayer money. So that's good and exciting. But that only really matters if the agency is implementing those changes.
Mm-hmm. So that's a potential savings or
right.
$17 for every $1
right.
spent. Well, the public did get a view of an IG investigation recently. Messages between two people who turned out to be lovers, both of them working on the FBI probe into Hillary Clinton's emails last year. Their exchanges showed them not to be supporters of Donald Trump, let's say. These were uncovered during the investigation that IG Michael Horowitz is leading now at the Justice Department. Did Michael Horowitz authorize these messages being made public?
I wanted to go back to an earlier question you had on like how these investigations are prompted. And this is a good example of one that was prompted by members of Congress asking IG Horowitz to look into the handling of the email investigation by the FBI. So the FBI is within the Department of Justice Inspector General's jurisdiction, and the investigation is into how the FBI handled the Clinton email investigation. And so this kind of is a really good example of a congressionally requested investigation that falls squarely within the jurisdiction. And so your question was whether or not it was the IG's decision to release those text messages. So I believe that the Inspector General Horowitz has indicated to the press that it wasn't his decision to release those text messages to the press. He did tell officers at the Department of Justice that he didn't see any reason why those shouldn't be shared with members of Congress. And of course, members of Congress have their own ability to share things with the press. But I believe he's been pretty public with that it wasn't his idea in making those available to the public.
So this is a case of an IG investigation turned over to Congress and then turned over to the press, which suggests that there are some politics in here. I mean, how are there any steps or any parts of the way that the IG office is set up to keep it out of politics?
Oh, absolutely. I think, because the inspectors general are in theory supposed to be independent of the agencies and independent of, those that they're overseeing, they're also in that same way supposed to be independent of politics. They have, mandates and clearly defined jurisdiction. I think it's impossible to separate politics from their work, but not because they're doing their work in a partisan way, but because then the way their work is interpreted and funneled into the public. And I will say what is unusual about the investigation into the FBI's handling of their Clinton email investigation is that investigation isn't complete. And so getting information in like this in the middle of the investigation is kind of more of a rare occurrence. And I think inspectors general offices try to make sure that they aren't having, all this information out before they make their conclusions and recommendations.
Hmm. Can an IG be fired from a case?
I'm not sure if they can be fired from it. IGs can be fired from their position. I told you they serve at the pleasure of the president. But they can be required to be recused off an investigation if it's something that they have a personal conflict of interest with.
So I've read that since President Trump was elected, there has been an increase, as much as a 40% increase in calls for IG investigations. This is according to Walter Schaub. He's a former ethics official. It also seems to me that the Trump administration, in the candidate Trump's proclamation that he's going to drain the swamp, expose government waste, get root out corruption, has the Trump administration called for IG investigations that you know of?
Not that I know of, but what's interesting about that is that there's so many vacancies remain in the offices of the inspector general. And we at POGO have been pretty vocal about how that is, those are positions that are very key to that, mission that the president has said that he's very committed to, rooting out fraud, waste and abuse inside the federal government. And so we've been urging him to make those appointments and have them go through Senate confirmation process so that these offices have leadership that has stronger congressional oversight. After a Senate confirmation hearing, there's increased oversight over the individual and increased oversight over the office. If the president is truly that committed to that mission, then this should be something that is a high priority for him. I also think, the increased investigations is a really good thing. It means that these offices are working in the way that they should.
Elizabeth Hempowitz, Policy Director for POGO. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Investigation at least partially closed. Today's episode was produced by me, Virginia Prescott, and Ben Henry. Music from Broke for Free. What do you want to know about how government agencies work? Something you see in the news and maybe blow past? Well, send your questions about how government works to civics101@nhpr.org or visit our website, civics101podcast.org. And while you're there, sign up for Extra Credit, our weekly newsletter. It's packed with information, quizzes, trivia, and visuals, which just don't play as well in podcasts. Civics 101 is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.